important point.
As soon as I know that he's got it set to record. And so in the subject of rededication, you can use the word renewal or the word returning. Rededication is for somebody who has been dedicated. You can't rededicate until you've been dedicated. So this is a message for people who are saved. We also then looked at the fact as far as why should one rededicate their life to Christ. The first thing I stated was that it's because of unconfessed sin. The second thing was, and I dealt extensively with this, because of leaving our first love, looking at the book of Revelation chapter 2, verse 2 to 5. And you can find them, anybody who's listening or watching in live streaming, you can go to the church's website, onesoulatatime.net, and you would be able to get the details of what I just referred to by way of a quick review. Now tonight, what we're going to look at is just one point, and if it goes quicker than what I expect, then we will get to prayer groups much quicker, okay, which is not a problem. But frequently, my wife reminds me, you know, I've said to her already, you know, I don't really have much tonight. I don't think it'll take long. And she just smiles to me. So Hebrews chapter 2. Another reason why we need, as a Christian who is not where they ought to be in the relationship with Jesus Christ. They're saved. They know Christ has forgiven their sin and he lives in their life, but they are not in a right relationship with him. We often refer to this as being backslidden. In other words, they were at this point and now they've gone back from that point. And another reason why rededication can be needed is because of a hardness of one's heart. Now that's a dangerous condition, to be in a place of a hardness of heart. A term the Bible frequently uses is being stiff-necked. Okay, the Christian who knows they're saved, they know they have a relationship with Jesus Christ, but they also know that they are not living the way Jesus would want them to live. And there's a sense in which they feel guilty about that, but they are adamant to not change it. Okay, and of course, the term stiff-necked is a very visual term. And you've met somebody who's been stiff-necked already. When you've been talking with them, and they, I don't care what you say, you know, their physical body, and they get stiff-necked. I'm using the term hardness of heart. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 1. Therefore, we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast, and every transgression and disobedience received the just recompense of reward, here's the verse that I'm looking for, how shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord and was confirmed unto us by them that heard him? How shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? Now that is frequently and rightly used to identify somebody who is not saved. They're lost, as we say spiritually. They're unsaved, and they should not neglect the salvation that's out there. They should not take it lightly. They should respond and receive Christ. but it can also be applied in the sense of, here I am, I'm a Christian. I'm born again, there's no doubt about it. But I'm neglecting it. I'm not nurturing it. I'm not developing my faith. I'm not praying as I should. I'm not reading my Bible as I should. I'm not going to church as faithfully as I could. And I'm neglecting it. Okay, I have it, but I'm neglecting it. And so he makes that clear there in verse 3. How shall we escape? Well, there is no escape. There's a judgment to be faced for the Christian who neglects the salvation that God has so freely given him. Chapter 3, beginning at verse 7. Wherefore, as the Holy Ghost saith, today, if ye will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation, in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation and said, they do alway error in their heart, and they have not known my ways. So I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ, if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end. While it is said, today, if ye will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation. Now we'll stop there. You notice in verse 7 it says, today. Verse 13, it says, today. And verse 15 says, today. God makes a sense of urgency. This is something that needs to be dealt with today. It's not the sort of thing that should be put off till another time. And he says in verse 8, harden not your hearts as in the provocation. And then in verse 15, while it is said today, if you will hear his voice, and again, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation. Now, if you'll turn to the book of Numbers, in the Old Testament, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. Numbers chapter 14. I'm going to read verse 2 to 11. Actually, what I'm going to do is summarize verses 2 to 11. Verse 2 says, and all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in the wilderness. They were not happy with Moses and Aaron. They blamed Moses and Aaron for leading them out of Egypt, okay, and into the wilderness. And, you know, I've always been amazed at this. Here there are, 6 million? How many is it? Six something.
I hear all sorts.
Yeah, all sorts of numbers. It was a large group. I mean, we're not talking even just 600 people. We're talking an unbelievable number. And they're blaming two men for leading them out. I mean, you know, try to get a picture of this. I mean, Moses said to them, God sent me. The great I am has sent me. He sent me to lead you out. I mean, if they if they didn't want to go, all they would have had to say is no. I mean, what's Moses going to do? How's he going to make them? I mean, the most he'd have had was a bow and arrow or a spear. He couldn't get them all. You know? And it isn't like he had a bomb. And he says, well, if you don't leave, I'm going to set off this nuclear bomb over you. You say, well, that's silly. I know it is. And so is their not, they're leaving and then blaming Moses and Aaron. But that's what they did. My Bible heads this, the people murmur. And indeed they did. And they said, we'd rather be back in Egypt. Now, when they were back in, listen, here is human nature at work. When they were back in Egypt, they were murmuring, that's whining and complaining, because of how the Pharaoh was making them work. And they were there as slaves. And they didn't like it. And so God answers their plea for help. Now they're out of there. And they're in another set of circumstances they don't like. So what do? They murmur, complain, whine about it. Listen, I have seen too many Christians like that. Okay? God gets them out of one mess that they're complaining about. He delivers them, gets them out of one mess. Now their life seems to be going okay. And then they meet a bump in the road. They meet something that doesn't go the way they'd like it to go. So here they are complaining to God again. That's human nature, folks. And there's only one cure for that. And that's God's control of our life. And so, verse 3 through 8 is a recounting of how God worked and God moved and God delivered them. And then verse 9, where it says, only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land. They were fearful of the people of the land of Canaan that they went to. And he says, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. But they were not putting their confidence in God. Their confidence was in themselves, and in themselves they knew they couldn't withstand the armies of Canaan. He said, the Lord's with us. Don't fear them. Verse 10, but all the congregation, here's what the congregation said. Here's what the congregation, referring to the people of Israel. Okay, now we're saying there's multitudes of them. So they're not all talking at once, but they've got their delegated spokesmen. And all the congregation bade stone them with stones. We don't like what Moses and Aaron are saying. Kill them. Get rid of them. Then we can do what we want. Now listen, picture this if you can. What would Moses and Aaron have done if they just decided amongst their own little group that was going to be discussing this subject? What would Moses and Aaron have done if they just all turned around and went back? Huh? I mean, how would Moses and Aaron have stopped them? Well, if Moses and Aaron had intervened and called in God, he'd have stopped them. But they weren't counting on God. They're looking at Moses and Aaron. And so, and the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation. Now that got their attention. The glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long will this people, what are the next two words? Tell me. Provoke me. So we're back in Hebrews, okay? And he says, harden not your hearts as did the Israelites in the provocation. That's the provocation. When they were whining and complaining against Moses and Aaron, they provoked God. Verse 15, he says, harden not your hearts as in the provocation, like the Israelites did when they provoked God. And so, but here again, you see, I'm dealing with a reason to rededicate as a Christian whose relationship isn't what it ought to be, is because of the hardness of the heart. And so we must be careful that we do not ignore when God speaks to us regarding a condition of a hardened heart, because it will only get worse. Okay? And you don't want to get to a point or a place where, well, it just doesn't matter to you anymore. You just don't care. Because then you're alone. Then what you've done is push God out of your life. And when you've pushed God out of the life, that's just where he is. Out of your life. Now, I'm not saying you're not saved anymore. We're talking about Christians. Listen, what happens when a son or a daughter rebels against a parent? Doesn't want to listen to them, doesn't want to follow them. And what they do, they leave the parent. Or depending on the circumstances, the parent must have them leave. But now what you have is a son or a daughter who has put the parents out of their life by way of an influence. They don't want to heed them. They don't want to listen to them. They want to do what they want to do. And the sad thing is, not only does the heart get hard, and I'm looking here where we have a heart, but it's not the physical heart, of course, it's the spiritual heart gets hard. But the situation and what you're dealing with is that then one gets blind and they can't see. They're living a life in such a way as they can't see the desperation of it. There's always someone else or something else to blame. It was my boss. It was my friend. It was that policeman that stopped me. Whatever. There's always something else to blame for the problem. And it all comes about because of putting the parents out of the life. And that's what happens with a Christian. Okay? Just like a child is still the parent's child. And it grieves the parent unbelievably. So a person who's saved, they're a Christian, they have God in their life, but it grieves God, and they just can't see the issue. Now he goes on and he says in verse 16, for some, when they had heard, did provoke, howbeit not all that came out of Egypt by Moses, but with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? And to whom swear he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believed not? God was working for those who were following him. God was working to provide for those who knew him and were living for him. But the ones that believed not, those, God couldn't do anything for. Just like in us as Christians, God can't do anything for us when we harden our heart against Him. It isn't that He doesn't want to, but it's our hard heart that keeps Him from that. So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. In the case, literally, of the children of Israel entering into the promised land. Now in chapter 12, if you'll turn to chapter 12, I'd like you to see verse 11. Because God loves us, He therefore won't let us just do our own thing. He makes attempts at correcting matters. And He says in verse 11, "Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby." So God chastens the hard-hearted Christian. He brings discipline to their life. He intervenes in their life to try and turn them around. And when God intervenes in a life, yeah, I love it. Because when God intervenes, then people, they'll want to blame God. Yeah. Well, this wouldn't happen. Well, why is God doing this to me? They seem to forget, you know, just like when a child is spanked, okay, in the case of a young child, spanked by a parent. Why'd you do that? Don't you remember when you threw the rock and it hit the car and put a great big scratch on it? Uh-oh. Oh, no, I didn't remember that. All they want to remember is what the parent did. So all they want to remember is what God did. And here, no chastening for the present seems to be joyous. It's not. Nobody likes to get spanked. But grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, after the whole experience has been gone through, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness. It makes a difference in the life. It changes the life. If it improves the life. Now listen. We need to verify to ourselves. I'm going back to Hebrews chapter 3. Verse 16. For some, when they had heard, did provoke. Howbeit, not all that came out of Egypt by Moses, but with whom was he grieved 40 years? Who was God grieved with for 40 years? It was those that sinned. Those that had unbelief. And he told them, he said, you're not going to enter in to what I've led you to, this land flowing with milk and honey. And so they couldn't enter in because of their unbelief. We need to verify to ourselves where we're at. Where am I at in my walk with the Lord? Now listen, some of you, it's not going to take much for you to verify. I am saved and I am living for the Lord. I'm walking with Him. You'll be the first one to say I'm not what I ought to be. There's some things in my life that I need to get God's grace and help to change. But you can, overall, up front, you can say, I'm living for Jesus Christ. And listen, that's not presumptuous. That's not being proud. That's giving God the glory. You know, what you once were was something else. You've heard me give my testimony. What I once was something else, but I'm not that now. And so I'm not going to let myself, nor have the devil let me, wallow in what I used to be back when I was 19 and 20 years old. I mean, get real. When we try to do that sort of thing, what we're doing is denying the power and the presence of God in my life. God's been here. Could I have been a better pastor? You bet. Could I have been a better father? For certain. Could I have been a better husband? No doubt. But you want to know something? Because of his presence in my life, I wasn't the worst husband. I wasn't the worst father. I wasn't the worst pastor. And if I were to just wallow in my failures, I'm denying God in my life. And so I don't want to do that. And so I want to give God the glory. So I need to verify to myself. You need to verify to yourself. If you're a Christian, wherever you are in your relationship with God, verify where you're at in it. And God will help you to change, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being high. If you're at a 2, hey, listen, God will take you to 3. Why, good night, he might even pass 3 and take you right to 4. Okay? If you're at an 8, well, wonderful, because you were once at a 2. But now you're at an 8. That's great. But you want to get to 9 or 10, don't you? Sure you do. And so we need to verify to ourselves where we're at. Now, one last passage. 2 Corinthians chapter 13. 2 Corinthians chapter 13. I'm going to verse 5. Paul says to the Christians who live at Corinth. Now he's writing to the Christians. He's writing to believers. And he tells them, examine yourselves whether ye be in the faith. Prove your own selves. Can it be any clearer? You don't care for the relationship. You don't care for life and where it's at and how it is now. Well, Paul says, examine yourselves.
Good.
And determine whether you actually have Jesus Christ in your life or not.
Good.
Now, some of you, when you examine yourself, you're going to readily say, yes, I know he's there. You heard my testimony, how there were those in a street meeting that questioned if I really was saved, but I knew I was saved. When I examined myself, I knew I was in the faith. Now, was I where I ought to be in my relationship with Jesus? No.
Uh-oh.
I've told you that over and over again. So examine yourself, whether you're in the faith or not. So you come to the conclusion, yes, I am. Okay, then he says, prove yourselves. Know ye not your own selves, how that Jesus Christ is in you. You say, you won't be sure of this now. You won't be sure if he's in you or not. How that Jesus Christ is in you, except ye be reprobates. In other words, examine it, determine, is he there or not? If he's not there, then you're a reprobate. You're not his. But do you want to know something? If you come to that conclusion, listen to me. Don't tune me out now. Good night, don't tune me out now. Because you can change that.
Yes, sir.
You can become a child of God. You say, well, I already prayed that. Well, apparently, you weren't sincere or genuine. You say, well, I was sincere. Yeah, but if you now examine yourself and find out you're not in the faith, then admit it. Whatever it was, and I commend you for trying something, but it didn't work. Okay? These dear ladies, when they're expecting babies, okay? Now, I read I liked your, you saw me, my comment on your thing. And Jen is a doula, okay? And she helps ladies. And so you have these ladies, and then they get these false pains. Well, the pain's real, but it's not delivery pain. And they go to the hospital. And they're in the hospital for a few hours, and then the doctor comes in, examines them, and says, you can go home. What? What? You know, I know, but you can go home. Come back next time. And so, all right, there are times where people pray, and they're sincere at the moment, they're sincere at the time, but they don't get new life. They don't get a change of life. And as a result, now, don't blame God.
That's right.
Okay, don't blame God.
That's right.
Okay, and I'm even going to say this. I'm going to be Mr. Nice Guy. Don't blame yourself. You did what at the time you understood and what at the time you were sincere about, but it didn't bring a change. And so what you need to do now is go to Christ, talk to him about that, and then put your faith and your trust in Jesus Christ. Examine yourself whether you be in the faith. Prove your own self. And if you do that, you say, well, yeah, hey, I've examined myself, and I know I'm a Christian, but I just don't have the relationship I ought to. All right, now, this is where you can rededicate. This is where you can renew that faith that you put in Jesus Christ. This is where you can return to him, whatever communicates to you what it is that you want and need to do. Father in heaven, thank you for your love and grace and all of your goodness to us. Now, I pray as we go to prayer time that you'll hear us as we intercede on behalf of others. For I ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.